Hey, and welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into a truly fascinating and, incredibly complex corner of mathematics and physics. We're talking about how probability and dynamics intertwine in the realm of quantum mechanics, specifically looking at the stability of certain fundamental equations. Yeah. It's dense, it's intricate, but trust me, by the end of this deep dive, you'll have some surprising insights, things that might make you rethink how we understand predictability in the universe.
Indeed. Our focus today is a groundbreaking paper by Jay Bergen from 1997. It's titled Invariant Measures for the Gross-Piatowski Equation. This paper takes us on, an in-depth exploration into the existence and behavior of what are called invariant measures. And these are for specific types of nonlinear evolution equations, particularly the nonlinear Schrödinger, or NLS, equation, and a variant called the Gross-Piatowski equation.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Our mission today is to understand what these invariant measures actually are, why they're so crucial for understanding the long-term behavior of these systems, and also the incredibly clever mathematical techniques Bergen used to tackle challenges that had, stumped researchers for years, especially as we move into higher dimensions. You're going to get a taste of some really cutting-edge math, see how it connects to fundamental physics, all without needing a PhD in quantum mechanics. Think of it as a shortcut, maybe, to being well-informed about a truly frontier area of research. So to start, what exactly are invariant measures? Maybe let's begin with a simpler idea. Like, imagine a closed system. Water sloshing around in a bottle, say. As the water moves, its shape changes, but the total amount of water inside stays constant, right? In classical physics, for systems like particles moving around, there's a similar idea. Liouville's theorem tells us the volume occupied by all possible states of a system, its phase space, remains constant over time. It's like the system's abstract configuration space doesn't shrink or expand.
Exactly. And what's fascinating here is that because the system's total energy, the Hamiltonian, is also preserved in these classical systems, certain statistical measures, known as Gibbs measures, are also invariant. These invariant measures provide a statistical description of the system's long-term behavior. They tell us where the system is likely to be found in its phase space over extended periods. It gives a probabilistic snapshot of its evolution. Like you said, even if we can't predict exactly where every molecule is, the overall distribution stays the same.
Okay, that makes sense for the classical finite dimensional world. But then we jump into the wild world of infinite dimensional systems, specifically certain nonlinear partial differential equations like the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. And I guess all that neat, tidy, finite dimensional intuition often just goes right out the window. So what makes these systems so much harder to describe with invariant measures?
Well, that's the core challenge, really. For these infinite dimensional systems, like the NLS equation describing quantum wave functions, rigorously constructing such Gibbs measures and then proving their invariance under the complex, often chaotic dynamics is incredibly difficult. It's a huge leap from predictably conserved volumes to trying to define statistical stability in a far more complex abstract setting, a setting where the number of variables is effectively infinite. This is the central problem Bergen is tackling in the paper.
And a prime example of these challenges is the nonlinear Schrödinger equation itself. The NLS, it's fundamental in quantum mechanics, describes how wave functions evolve. You can sort of imagine it having three main parts: how the wave changes over time, how it spreads out in space, and a crucial nonlinear term that depends on the wave function itself. And here's where it gets really interesting, right? The behavior changes drastically depending on whether that nonlinear term adds to or subtracts from the wave's energy.
Yes, precisely. That seemingly small plus or minus sign dictates whether we're in the defocusing case, which tends to spread the wave out, or the focusing case, which tends to concentrate it. And here's the kicker. The number of dimensions we're working in also plays a massive role in how challenging these problems become.
Okay, let's start simple then. D1, one dimension. Mm-hmm. For the defocusing case, you said things are relatively well behaved.
Yeah, in D1 defocusing, it's more manageable. We can define these random Fourier series, and they generate functions that are pretty nice mathematically. They exist in certain spaces, like LA and OOKO. The Gibbs measure for them is relatively well-behaved. We can define it, normalize it.
But the focusing case.
The focusing case in 1D, that's where the trouble starts. The mathematical expression for the Gibbs measure, this EARDX term, It isn't always integrable, which raises a really important question. How do you normalize a measure if its density isn't integrable? Imagine trying to define probabilities where the total probability adds up to infinity. It just doesn't make sense statistically.
Right. You can't have that.
So a breakthrough came from Leibowitz, Rose, and Speer. What they did was restrict the Gibbs measure to a specific bounded region, a ball in L space, and this worked for certain nonlinearities, specifically when the power P was less than 6, and also for P6 if the L norm, the total energy basically, was small enough.
Okay, so what does this tell us? That exponent P exceeds 6 sounds critical.
It is absolutely critical. It's directly related to what's called blow-up theory for the 1D focusing NLS.
Yes, you mean.
Literally. Solutions with enough energy, a sufficiently large L norm, can essentially blow up. They cease to exist in finite time, like a mathematical singularity forms.
Wow.
And it's fascinating how the normalizability of that statistical measure is intrinsically linked to this catastrophic behavior of individual solutions. If the measure could be normalized without restriction, it would have to include these blow-up states. But blow-up states don't evolve over time in a way that fits an invariant measure. It's a fundamental contradiction.
Okay, so that's one dimension. What happens when we go to D2? Two dimensions.
The difficulties escalate dramatically. For starters, the L norm, that measure of total wave intensity, isn't almost surely finite anymore in the basic setup.
So the total energy could be infinite.
Potentially, yes, for the raw measure. So to handle this, a procedure called Wick ordering becomes necessary. It's a technique borrowed from constructive quantum field theory. It's a kind of mathematical trick, really.
A trick? How so?
Imagine you have terms like book that are causing infinities. Wick ordering replaces them with corresponding Hermite polynomials. It's like recalibrating your measurement device to subtract off an infinite background noise, leaving you with a finite, meaningful value.
Okay, Wick ordering helps then, but does it solve everything in 2D?
It helps, but for the 2D focusing cubic NLS, that's where the power P is 2. Borgain's paper points out that even with Wick ordering and restricting the L norm, you generally can't get acceptable invariant measures in the limit. Because the cubic nonlinearity in 2D is critical. It's right on that knife edge of stability. It's notorious for allowing those blow-up solutions if the initial energy is large enough. The math just gets too difficult at that point for the standard NLS.
Okay, critical in 2D, and I'm guessing three dimensions. It doesn't get any easier.
Oh, much worse. Prepare yourself for D3. The problem gets even worse just in terms of the regularity of the initial data. The random functions defined by the underlying probability measure, the Wiener measure. Think of it like describing the path of a particle doing Brownian motion, but in function space. These functions are even rougher or more jagged in 3D.
So starting conditions are even fuzzier.
Exactly. They belong to a space called HOT, which is, mathematically speaking, quite rough. It's like trying to predict the future from an even more pixelated initial image. It makes predicting evolution incredibly challenging. The random wiggles are just much more pronounced.
Okay, so standard NLS is running into major roadblocks in 2D, and especially 3D. This is where Borgain's paper and the Gross-Piotrowski equation come in.
Precisely. This is where the paper really makes its mark. Instead of the standard NLS, he introduces this variant, the Gross-Piotrowski equation.
Where the paper gets its name.
Exactly. And the key idea, the crucial difference, is how the nonlinearity is handled. It's not just screw, it's tempered by a convolution with a real interaction potential V.
A convolution. So like smeared out or filtered?
Sort of, yeah. Think of V as a kind of filter or modifier for the interaction term. It smooths out some of the rough edges, you could say, adds a stabilizing ingredient to the equation.
And the properties of this V matter, I assume.
Absolutely crucial. How V behaves determines if the Gibbs measure can be properly normalized. In 2D, almost any decay property of V's Fourier transform works. Basically, as long as V's wiggles die down reasonably fast in frequency space, you can normalize the Wick-ordered measure.
But 3D is tougher.
Much tougher. In 3D, you need a stronger decay. Specifically, the Fourier transform V needs to decay faster than in air. And interestingly, this specific decay rate corresponds essentially to the Coulomb potential.
The one from electromagnetism, one or off force.
That's the one. It provides just the right kind of smoothing to the nonlinearity. It's what makes the problem mathematically tractable in 3D, where the standard NLS just hit a wall.
That's really clever. So modify the equation slightly with this V, and suddenly you can construct these important invariant measures, even in 3D. But constructing the measure, that's only half the battle, isn't it?
Correct.
You also need to prove that the system actually follows the statistical map over time, that the measure is invariant under the flow, the evolution of this Gross-Piotrowski equation.
Exactly. You need to show that if you pick your initial conditions according to this Gibbs measure, the system evolves in such a way that the statistics don't change over time.
Like stirring the water in the bottle, the pattern changes. But the amount of water, the measure, stays the same.
A good analogy, yes.
Does Bourgain's tempered equation make proving this invariance easier? Especially with that rough initial data you mentioned.
Well, easier is relative here. It makes it possible, which was the major hurdle. Remember, the initial data from the Wiener measure are these low regularity distributions. They're inherently rough, not smooth functions.
Right.
And solving the Cauchy problem, predicting the future state from that rough initial state, is notoriously difficult. This is where Bourgain's work really shines, combining deep methods from harmonic analysis, the study of waves and frequencies, with probabilistic arguments to handle the randomness of the data. The key is that the results hold for typical data, meaning almost surely with respect to the Wiener measure. It's a way to bypass the problems caused by a few bad initial states.
Okay, but you mentioned 3D still had new difficulties even for this modified equation.
Yes, even with the Gross-Piotrowski equation, proving the existence of the flow in 3D introduces new challenges compared to 2D.
What's the main obstacle there?
It largely comes down to our, well, poor understanding of periodic Schrittschatz's inequalities in D3.
Schrittschatz inequalities.
Yeah.
Those are the tools for predicting how waves spread out.
Exactly. They give bounds on how solutions grow or spread in space and time. Think of them as mathematical scaffolding. And in 3D, for periodic settings like a torus, these tools are just weaker, less effective than in lower dimensions or non-periodic space.
So the scaffolding isn't as strong in 3D.
Precisely. It makes rigorously proving that solutions exist and behave well much harder. The geometry and interactions are just more complex.
It's amazing how much work goes into proving these things rigorously.
Yeah.
But you mentioned something interesting. Even if you can only prove solutions exist for a short time locally,
yes,
the invariance of the Gibbs measure itself can help get you global solutions.
Yeah.
How does that work?
It's a really neat argument. If you can establish local well-posedness solutions exist for some short time interval, and, you know, the Gibbs measure is invariant, that invariance acts almost like a conserved quantity. It essentially prevents the solution from blowing up or behaving too wildly, because doing so would violate the statistical properties encoded in the invariant measure. So, you can often leverage the measure's invariance to extend the local solution to a global one, one that exists for all time, at least for almost all initial data drawn from that measure. It's a powerful probabilistic substitute for a classical conservation law.
Okay, so let's try to synthesize this. What are the big takeaways from Bourgain's paper? He presents three main propositions, right?
Yes, they build the core argument. Proposition one basically says, if your potential V has that strong decay in 3D, like the Coulomb potential, then the Wick-ordered Gibbs measure, when restricted to keep the total Wick-ordered energy bounded, actually converges to a proper, normalized, well-behaved probability measure.
So if V is strong enough, you can define the statistics properly in 3D.
Correct.
And proposition two.
Proposition two offers a similar conclusion, but under slightly different, broader conditions on V. Conditions that are more related to defocusing-like situations. It shows the approach isn't just a one-trick pony for that specific Coulomb-like decay.
Okay, and then Proposition 3 ties it all together, the main result.
That's the big one. It says, assuming V satisfies that crucial 3D decay condition, the solutions of the actual Gross-Piotrowski equation, or rather approximations to it, converge. And the resulting dynamics, the flow, has that normalized Gibbs measure as an invariant measure.
Wow, so putting it all together, Bourgain essentially showed that by slightly tweaking the nonlinearity with this potential V, he could overcome the hurdles in 3D. He could both construct these crucial invariant measures and prove that the system actually respects them over time, even starting from very rough, random initial conditions.
That's it, exactly.
It's a remarkable achievement in understanding the statistical mechanics of these complex quantum systems. It's like he found a mathematical governor for potentially chaotic quantum behavior.
Yes. If you connect it to the bigger picture, the strength and type of the nonlinearity are fundamental to whether the initial value problem is even well posed. Bourgain's work demonstrates how introducing this tempering potential V can make the problem mathematically tractable. It ensures solutions exist globally in time, and that this statistical description via the Gibbs measure actually holds true for the dynamics. It's a profound insight.
Incredible stuff. But like all great work, it probably opened up new questions too, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the lingering issues or future directions mentioned?
Absolutely. One deep point the paper reinforces is that fascinating connection between the difficulty of normalizing the Gibbs measure in the focusing NLS case and the existence of those classical blow-up solutions.
Right. You mentioned that link. It's almost like the math is warning you.
It is. If the measure were normalizable for the standard focusing NLS without any restrictions or this potential V, It would imply the measure gives significant weight to initial data that leads to blow-up. But blow-up solutions don't persist globally, so they can't be part of a truly invariant measure describing long-term behavior. The inability to normalize is reflecting a fundamental instability in the underlying dynamics.
That's a really elegant, if slightly terrifying, connection. What else?
Well, another major area mentioned as being almost not understood is ergodicity.
Ergodicity. Does the system explore all its possible states over time?
Exactly. Do typical trajectories eventually visit every region of the phase space compatible with the conserved quantities according to the invariant measure, like gas mixing thoroughly in a box? For these Gibbs measures constructed for NLS-type equations, whether they are ergodic is generally a wide-open question. There are some specific exceptions for completely integrable systems, like 1D cubic NLS, but generally it's unknown.
And there was one more point about smoothness, something a physicist might really care about.
Yes, that's a key point. The Gibbs measures Bourgain and others construct are supported on these low regularity functions or distributions. They're mathematically rigorous, but they describe states that are inherently rough or fuzzy.
Not smooth, classic-looking waves.
Right. So a major challenge, maybe the main shortcoming from a classical physics perspective, is whether we can find or construct an invariant measure that is supported by smooth functions. Functions that look more like the well-behaved solutions we often think about.
And that's still an open question.
Very much so. For generic nonlinear Hamiltonian PDEs, the known invariant measures, whether these Gibbs-type measures or measures associated with Cantori in finite dimensions, tend to live on non-smooth function spaces. Finding invariant measures supported on smooth functions remains a major, major open challenge in the field.
What a journey. Seriously. Yeah. From the relative calm of classical mechanics phase space through the really turbulent waters of nonlinear Schrodinger equations in higher dimensions. To the clever fix, the tempering, using the Gross-Putescu equation. We've really seen how mathematicians are pushing the absolute boundaries of what we can understand about complex dynamical systems. It's a world where well-behaved completely changes meaning depending on the dimension you're in, and where tiny mathematical details like the decay rate of a potential V can literally determine the long-term statistical fate of a quantum system.
It truly highlights the elegance, doesn't it? Pure mathematics intersecting with really deep physical problems. And those ongoing questions about ergodicity and especially about finding measures on smooth functions, they continue to drive so much research in this fascinating field. It shows there's still so much fundamental stuff we don't understand.
So for you, our listener, maybe chew on this. How often do you think the inherent messiness of a system like those low regularity, random initial conditions fundamentally changes the tools we need or even the nature of the solutions we can find? Does reality, at some level, just resist being perfectly smooth? And what does it mean for a picture of the universe if those truly smooth, classical-looking behaviors remain sort of stubbornly out of reach for rigorous mathematical description in these really complex fundamental systems? Lots to think about. Until next time, keep diving deep.